This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of January 18th, 2026. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 431. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And on the big deal feature, almost a year since Donald Trump returned to the White House, Prime Minister Mark Carney traveled to Beijing and pressed the reset button with China. My guest is Professor Dennis Molinaro, who explains why Canadians should be concerned. Dennis Molinaro is the author of Under Assault: Interference and Espionage in China's Secret War Against Canada. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast.
Prime Minister Carney, welcome to China.
I'm extremely pleased that we are moving ahead with our new strategic partnership. A partnership that is founded on five pillars will not only deepen our bilateral ties to the benefit of our peoples, but will also, in my judgment, help improve the multilateral system, a system that in recent years has become under great strain.
Partnership and cooperation are the two buzzwords from the Prime Minister's office for Mark Carney's visit to Beijing. The Liberal Party of Canada and the Chinese Communist Party have rekindled their long friendship. So who wins and who loses? My guest to talk about this is a professor of Canadian foreign policy and the history of intelligence at Ontario Tech University. He's also a former national security analyst and advisor to the Government of Canada. He is Dennis Molinaro. He is the author of Under Assault: Interference and Espionage in China's Secret War Against Canada, and it's published by Random House. So welcome to the podcast. I feel, watching this from afar, that it's like the clock has turned back to 2017. The federal government seems to have forgotten about the Hogue Commission into foreign interference, forgotten about hostage diplomacy, and forgotten about the pandemic, which of course started in Wuhan. So we're recording this on January 15th, and I wanted to find out your first impressions of Carney's visit to China. What is going through your mind?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me first. But it's right now, I guess my major concerns and reservations about all this is not so much, you know, it's not the doing business with China is inherently bad or having some kind of relationship. I mean, the United States sells to China. A lot of countries sell to China. That's not the main issue here. I think the main issue and worry that I have is this type of framing that's going on. This regard for China as a partner, as engaging in going back to the 2005 idea of a strategic partnership. This type of language, this type of romanticism, I think is the larger concern, particularly because of what we know in terms of their activities here and what they've been doing over the years, and like the Hogue Inquiry exposed to some extent. I mean, there's a lot of concern I have with framing China this way while leaving the security risks largely unaddressed, in my opinion.
Now, Under Assault tells the history of the Canada-China relationship. Talk about, of course, how Pierre Trudeau traveled there before getting into politics. And when he had the chance back in 1970, he began relations with the People's Republic of China, which was under Mao Zedong's rule at the time. And of course, later, Justin Trudeau, when he became prime minister, came to power in 2015, he held talks about free trade and an extradition deal. Of course, a lot of that got sidelined when the Meng Wanzhou controversy happened here in Vancouver. The Huawei executive held for extradition to the United States. Now, the book also tells the story of Paul Lin, someone who's not as well known to Canadians, a Vancouver-born student who attended the University of British Columbia, became an academic himself. He was the driving force behind the Canada-China Business Council. which has really become Canada's most powerful industrial lobby group. First, can you talk to the viewers about the Canada-China Business Council and also Paul Lin? And was Paul Lin a spy for China?
My archival research was really digging into this because of where Paul Lin kind of figured in this story. He kept coming up in terms of being a big advocate for the PRC, for Canada to recognize the PRC. And other countries had recognized the PRC before Canada. So the UK did it, France did it, and what have you. But they didn't really specifically weigh in so much on Taiwan like Canada did. And so Paul Lin kept coming up in the stories about it. And so then when I got my archival release, then I started to see some indication that there was something more going on with Paul Lin. I mean, there was a discussion where he was trying to secretly get into Sweden where the talks were taking place. And so that kind of raised eyebrows. He denied that he ever knew Trudeau until later in the 1970s. And then my archival release that I got, the big one, basically the RCMP categorized him as what they called an agent of influence for China, in that he was putting the CCP in their interests first, and that he would, and that he was specifically tasked and working for them. And the documents are redacted, so I can't really get into it. I don't really know why what he was tasked to do. Sorry, but we do know what he was doing, which was advocating for the recognition of the PRC. And so it seems then that how heavily he was doing this and the fact that he was rumored to be working both sides, working for the PRC and for the Canadian government, that he may have likely and looks like he was influencing the Canadian government. And this was a foreign interference operation of some sort to try to influence Canada to recognize China in the manner that it did, because the U.S. ended up replicating that. And he goes on to the U.S. to actually continue on those that push for recognition. So it's an important moment that I think we need to revisit, because it sends a signal that potentially we have interference and influence happening right from the very beginning of Canada's relationship with China. And he goes on to be, as you mentioned, he has a role in creating the Canada-China Business Council. So it's important to recognize that early history and understand, you know, how we get to the moments and the concerns today, because they really date back to the 1970s.
Yeah, and the Canada-China Business Council has had influence at the highest levels with various prime ministers, especially the Liberal prime ministers, but they still were able to lobby under Harper, for instance, and Mulroney during those conservative eras. But this group has been largely funded by the Desmarais family behind the Power Corporation. And it seems to have succeeded in getting Carney to try to get this relationship back on track.
Yeah, so I don't have much in terms of the current day Canada-China Business Council. I don't really focus a lot on it, so you're better positioned than I am on that front. But yeah, I mean, it's very concerning to me that this early history, we don't have it fully fleshed out yet either. I mean, that's the other part of the problem, right? A lot of what I got is redacted. There's still thousands of more files there that pertain to Paul Lin going into the 70s and 80s, as I understand it. And so that takes us more into that time period, closer to the present, that we really need to get into to see what else he was up to in Canada.
Now, you mentioned Canada's role in basically marginalizing Taiwan. There was, of course, the Montreal Olympics, the controversy before then. Canada, decided early on to recognize only mainland China instead of Taiwan. And Taiwan is in the news these days because of Xi Jinping's threat to invade. And most recently, end of December, the full-scale military exercises around Taiwan. The worry is that China might have a blockade around Taiwan before it invades. And all the way to the present, just before Mark Carney arrived in Beijing, there were some Liberal MPs who were on a parliamentary diplomacy visit with MPs from the Conservatives that were in Taipei, and some of the Conservative MPs met with President Lai Ching-te, but the Liberal MPs were recalled. we're taken away from that visit so as not to draw attention to people in Mark Carney's party paying attention to Taiwan, because they fear that that would have upset Xi Jinping. Talk about the history of what Canada has done to marginalize Taiwan, which really should be a country which is closer in so many ways to Canada. It's a small island country about the size of Vancouver Island, and the population until recent years in Canada, the population was comparable to Canada. But meanwhile, it's a democratic country, but Canada has actually worked with China, I guess, wittingly or unwittingly, to help marginalize Taiwan.
Yeah, if we go back to that time period, I mean, that's why that recognition moment becomes so significant, right? We have a time period there where Canada ends up, I would say, the PRC pretty much, I think, wins that negotiation in getting what they wanted, which was for Canada to note the PRC's position with respect to Taiwan. And for the PRC, I mean, they can interpret note, the word note in Mandarin, to essentially mean a type of agree with, right? So that's important. And what happens then is that, well, Taiwan quickly starts to become isolated within the international community, right? Because of the way that recognition is framed. And the United States adopts that same recognition language. I mean, and after Paul Lin goes there and is working the same thing in terms of trying to get the PRC recognized in the manner that it wants. So, and about 30 other countries follow Canada's lead after this recognition. So what it does initially is, again, it in the international community isolates them. And then you go into the 1976, as you mentioned, the Olympics, when we're talking there about, you know, Canada does not want to allow Taiwan to call itself the Republic of China. It doesn't want them to wave the flag, so to speak. It really comes down hard, and basically it won't allow them to, they basically end up withdrawing from the games on their own because of the treatment by Canadian officials and how they're regarding them leading into the games, which is unfortunate. But again, it was towing essentially China's one China policy, and China wasn't even a member of the IOC at the time. Wasn't even participating, and yet Canada was fiercely defending the one China policy against Taiwan.
Now, before Mark Carney arrived in Beijing, former Prime Minister Jean Chrétien visited Beijing. He even sat down for an interview with CCTV, Chinese state TV. During his decade in office, 1993 to 2003, he forged closer ties with China, really carried on what Pierre Trudeau has started. And that was despite the aftermath of the Tiananmen Square massacre in 1989 and the fears, especially of Hong Kongers, about the handover from Great Britain to People's Republic of China in 1997. There was the famous RCMP CSIS Project Sidewinder back in 1998. It warned about the Chinese government. It warned about Chinese triads. It warned about the Chinese government and the triads working together, and both taking aim at Canada to weaken Canada and to commit crimes, transnational crimes, basically. Yet, for instance, John Chrétien still went ahead with shutting down the ports police here, especially on the West Coast. And it's been never the same since. It's an open door to crime. You know, the Delta Police and the Delta Municipality did a research project with Peter German a few years ago that highlighted what goes on there at the container terminal. Back in the late 1990s, I was working at the Richmond News in Richmond, British Columbia. It was changing a lot because of the migration wave from Hong Kong for fear of being under the People's Republic of China rule. And John Chrétien came back and forth, often came through Richmond, through the Vancouver International Airport, before or after his Team Canada trade missions. And he was always asked about human rights in China, didn't really seem to care, but he still maintained this presence. Whenever the China issue comes up, John Chrétien pops up, and all the way until this week. What is your analysis of his role historically all the way until present day?
Yeah, I mean, it's a complicated one that I can't really seem to get much answer on, despite my best efforts, because it's bewildering. I found even to my interview subjects that were formerly involved in politics of his defense of the PRC and his advocacy for it. But you're right; it goes back to that period of the '90s where he carries on the policies of Trudeau Senior, and it's actually quite shocking how quickly it goes on, or how it starts up again after Tiananmen. I mean, there's a, you know, reference in the book where liberal MPs at the time are saying they don't want to get bogged down with discussions of Tiananmen and dealing with China. And it's kind of shocking considering what happened, and also how quickly Pierre Trudeau even traveled to China with his family after the Tiananmen Square massacre, and even went into the square. So, I mean, when it comes to Chrétien, yeah, the Canadians and the Americans, too, they both had this fear of missing out when it came to China, this idea that somehow in that period that they needed to get in quickly in order to not miss out on business opportunities. But I would say the Americans never went as far, or were never really lost the plot, I think, as much as Canada did, where Canada seemed to be putting everything up for sale when it came to China, whether it was CANDU nuclear reactors. That was the big announcement of that Team Canada visit, the first one, or whether it was even, you know, selling the idea of selling military equipment and helicopters and spy planes. I mean, all of that's discussed in the book, that everything could be up for sale. And it boggles the mind of how quickly and how easily these kinds of arrangements could be made and nothing paid attention to security, because I also know from the time period that there were briefings that were declassified that went out, not briefings, assessments that were created. I managed to get the declassified ones that were warning about, you know, the PRC and spying and what have you. So what was done about it? Didn't seem to be much of anything. So again, you're right. Again, China has referred to Chrétien as an old friend, and he's back in the news again, leading the trade delegation. And so, you know, this is again, it speaks to that lack of concern for our relationship with the United States, our own internal security, and thinking that we can partner with a country like China and forego all those security concerns in favor of business, as if somehow the business and the trade will just solve all our issues, and it won't.
But the relationship with the United States, it's obvious that Mark Carney, of course, he came to power last year with the Elbows Up campaign in reaction to Donald Trump, his second presidency, and his sour relations with Canada. Mark Carney is looking for other markets, and I guess the easiest one, low-hanging fruit to the Liberal Party historically is China. But at the same time, we've seen China become a very close ally of Putin and Russia. And right. Of course, Putin is not relenting on his war on Ukraine and doesn't really want to talk peace. If he talks peace, he wants to talk it on his own terms. Yet here we have Canada, through Carney, coming closer to China, which could and should have the power to tell its ally Putin to stand down, to talk peace, to have a ceasefire, but that's not happening. So here we have Canada spending a lot of money, a lot of time to support Ukraine on one hand, on the other hand, get closer with Russia's closest ally. There seems to be some dissonance here.
Yeah, I mean, that is one of the most shocking things, really, when you really break it down, is when you think about who the PRC is allied with around the world, right? Whether it was Maduro in Venezuela or North Korea or Iran or, like you mentioned, Russia. I mean, there's ample things that have come out in the press in the last few years, the last 2 years alone, about how much the PRC has been supporting Russia economically and its war against Ukraine. And it really boggles the mind then, because as you mentioned, right, we end up wanting to engage with some type of partnership or expanded trade relationship with the PRC, while at the same time the PRC is funding and supporting another clear adversary of the West. And it's it's something that I think Canadians are not giving enough attention to in terms of understanding the seriousness of where this government could be taking us, and the dangers that come with that, in trying to expand that relationship. And really, when we talk about diversification, I mean, we shouldn't just be talking about diversification from the United States. We should be talking about diversification from China. When we have things like, you know, the canola tariffs that China levied against Canada, well, why not? Should we not be also focusing on diversifying our canola exports away from China, considering that they've targeted this before and weaponized it during the detention of the Michaels? So it seems that, you know, we shouldn't be forced into believing that there's some type of trade-off between either the United States or China. It doesn't have to be that way. It can be diversification for the sake of a more independent and stronger Canada in general.
Now, in Under Assault, you wrote about the connections between scientists at Canada's National Microbiology Laboratory in Winnipeg and the Wuhan Institute of Virology, which became world famous for all the wrong reasons in 2019 and 2020. Now, the world didn't seem to learn its lessons after SARS in 2002, 2004. I mean, a lot of money was put in here in Canada to the Public Health Agency of Canada to be a defense mechanism against the next pandemic. It didn't work. It didn't work around the world. At least 7 million people have died from COVID-19. The death toll has got to be more. But here we are with Mark Carney in China, rekindling trade. We don't have the answers to the key questions about that. You know, will we ever get to the bottom of the lab scandal in Winnipeg and how the virus originated in Wuhan? And will our politicians ever step back and ask the questions themselves and wonder why we should be trading more with a country that we can't trust to keep public health and to keep a public health emergency from going worldwide? It's going to happen again sometime, somewhere.
Yeah, to answer your question bluntly, I don't think we're ever going to get the true story about what happened over there in terms of the Wuhan lab and the origins of COVID-19. I mean, China destroyed all the early samples of the virus early in 2020. So we're never going to be able to trace really effectively where the virus could have actually originated from. We had so many different security violations, and these scientists that had shipped, you know, virus samples of Ebola overseas to China, worked in the Wuhan lab there, partnering with people with connections to the PLA. Now living under an alias and still working there in their science biotechnology industry, as far as I understand. So, again, it speaks to what kind of a partner are we talking about when we refer to China, because this is the past and it's the recent past. This isn't the distant past. This is just a few years ago. And again, we don't have, from the way the government is talking, you would think that none of these things ever happened. That if we didn't have the internet, we didn't have the record of these events occurring, is it would be as if they never occurred, because they aren't being mentioned really clearly. I mean, even today, I saw that the delegation was forced to, people in the delegation were using burner phones when they go over to China. And so again, is this the type of partner that we want, where these types of security measures need to be taken for a delegation that's visiting? I mean, we should be rethinking this, I think.
Well, thank you again for joining me on the Breaker.News podcast. Dennis Molinaro, he's the author of Under Assault, Interference and Espionage in China's Secret War Against Canada. It's published by Random House. And Dennis is also professor of Canadian Foreign Policy and History of Intelligence at Ontario Tech University, also a former national security analyst and advisor to the Government of Canada. Thanks again.
Thank you very much for having me. Appreciate it.
Now it's time on the break. Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In FocusTaiwan.tw, Taiwan, Phoenix, Inc. MOU on expanding semiconductor AI cooperation. Phoenix is home to two TSMC wafer fabrication plants, with four more planned under a $165 billion U.S. dollar investment package, the largest single foreign direct investment in U.S. history. Phoenix Mayor Kate Gallego highlighted her background in business administration, saying it ensures she is able to support the growth of Taiwanese startups in her city. In Kyoto news, Japan, U.S. defense chiefs confirm unshaken alliance amid Asia unease. Following his meeting with U.S. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth at the Pentagon, near Washington, Japanese Defense Minister Shinjiro Koizumi said he was reassured that the administration of President Donald Trump remains committed to peace and stability in the Indo-Pacific. In ABC News Australia, Japan begins test mining seabed for rare earth minerals to reduce reliance on China. Tokyo has launched an ambitious plan to mine the floor of the Pacific for mud rich in rare earth minerals at a depth of 6 kilometers. One of Japan's icons, Mount Fuji, is just under 3.8 kilometers high. The plan has been years in the making, but comes at a precarious time, with diplomatic relations between Tokyo and Beijing at a low ebb. In Hong Kong Free Press, Ming Pao to cease operations in Canada, last issues to be published Friday. Ming Pao launched its editions in Vancouver and Toronto, both home to a sizable population of Hong Kong immigrants, in 1993. Around 60 employees were terminated due to financial reasons. The offices will operate until January 31st. Competitor Sing Tao stopped printing in 2022 but remains online.
That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
Oregon Journalism Project in Willamette Week. Interstate Bridge staff hid information about ballooning cost of giant highway project. The estimated price tag more than doubled from $6 billion to $13.6 billion, but staff told a bi-state panel December 15th it didn't have new numbers. Project staffers first said back in January 2024 that they planned to release new cost estimates. 2 years later, staff appeared chagrined at last month's meeting about the lack of information. On KNKX Public Radio, report finds $149 billion backlog of clean energy projects in Washington. Washington ranks dead last among U.S. states in renewable energy growth. A major reason for this is an extensive backlog of clean energy projects. That is according to a report released at the Carbon Policy Forum in Seattle. The report? It's called Build Sustainable High Impact Infrastructure Together. The short title is Build Shit. That's S-H-I-I-T. Meanwhile, Washington State Democrats are floating a millionaire's tax. And check out thebreaker.news and bobmackin.substack.com for the stories behind the headlines, such as Privacy Watchdog says Richmond City Hall's surveillance camera project broke the law.
That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate, so you won't stand alone, you won't stand alone.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the Stanley Park Preservation Society, led by Michael Robert Kaditz. The society has taken Vancouver City Hall and Park Board to court twice in a bid to stop logging tens of thousands of trees in Stanley Park. The city blames a moth infestation. The society says that conflicts of interest and bad science are ruining Vancouver's jewel. Last week, the group raised the alarm about the future of a 500-year-old Douglas fir that is slated for cutting. And you can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar? Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news.
Oh,
that's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of January 18th, 2026. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 18th of January in 1958, Willie O'Ree, Canada's first black National Hockey League player, debuted with the Boston Bruins? And in 1993, the first Martin Luther King Jr. Day across all 50 states. Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca and bobmackin.substack.com. Sign up for the free email newsletter and get updates to your inbox, or follow The Breaker News for news as it happens on X, formerly Twitter. And you can support The Breaker for as little as $7 a month. For more information, go to bobmackin.substack.com.
Until next week.